Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 23rd day of January, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Call, and some days I start off with a particular news story or two that's intended to demonstrate a trend or a theme or something that's going on in the country. Today, it's a whole different kind of a story that I lead off with. This one is, in fact, something that, well, I got to be honest, and there's no polite way to put it. When I saw it, it just plain pissed me off because, ultimately, this is probably one of the most important and absolutely infuriating stories that I may have ever done, certainly when it comes to the Supreme Court and a number of traitors, five, in fact, that essentially said, hey, you know, we may have twisted the Constitution before, we may have ignored elements, we may have had legal interpretations that enabled us to circumvent the clear meaning of words like no warrant shall issue or shall not be infringed. But today, they basically, if you'll pardon my bluntness, just came right out and said, F you to these states and the people, respectively, to the entire concept of the Constitution and the rule of law, oh yeah, and certain specifics in there. Now, what am I talking about? A lawsuit made its way to the Fifth Circuit of Appeals that had to do with the invasion of the United States across the non-existent southern border. After a federal judge sided with the invasion and the illegal, fake, puppet-on-a-string Biden-Fuhrer. How dare the state of Texas and its governor and attorney general think they can stand in the way of the invasion that is going on and put up razor wire, for example? But the appeals court last month said no. He cannot send his federal agents in there to violate the Constitution and aid and abet an invasion of these United States by cutting the razor wire. On Monday, in a 5-4 ruling, the so-called Supreme Court essentially said, the hell with our oath, the hell with the Constitution, and I'll read the specifics in just a second, and we're going to let the invasion continue. Bring it on! Come on in! You want to invade this country? We aren't going to stop you. They granted the Biden-Fuhrer regime's emergency request to let the invasion continue. And if you're not mad, folks, you probably want to just change the dial. From the order that was issued yesterday, the application to vacate injunction is granted. The December 19, 2023 order of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, case number 23-50869, is vacated. And as far as are there actually some justices that honored their oath and understand what the Constitution says? Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Kavanaugh all said they would deny the application to let the invasion continue and vacate the emergency injunction. Meanwhile, along with the usual leftists, we have Justices Sick Roberts, and this one is perhaps not that surprising but still disgusting, Amy Coney Barrett, who said, F you to the American people and their ability to have secure borders or even enjoy the, concept of life, liberty, and property in the absence of the rule of law. Now, here, folks, is where the rubber meets the road. And honestly, part of the reason I think this is one of the most disgusting Supreme Court decisions in American history is because usually there's at least a rationale for saying, hey, because you maybe made a deal with the devil and you traded away essential liberty for a little temporary security, you don't have a right to be free of illegal search and seizure, or to keep and bear arms, or to worship the God that you've already turned your back on, or to be allowed to gather together and petition the government for a redress of grievances. Yeah. We've seen all of that before, but this time what they're saying is even a state which is under invasion can't even so much as dare to impede the invasion when Big Brother says they're going to come in and take over what you've got, and how dare you try to stop them. So, with that in mind, I'll point out that there are three places in what was once called the Constitution for these United States where the word invasion is used. And let's talk about each of them. First one is in Article 1, right up front, where it says, all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which seems to have now been effectively neutered, so maybe that's a non-issue. If the president can make law, and the Supreme Court can make law, and the Congress is immaterial. And so, of course, is the Bill of Rights. But still, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 15 says that Congress shall have the power to, and here I quote, provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Except, of course, when the Supreme Court and the United States occupational government says, this invasion is ours, and we intend to make war against you peons. Folks, that is exactly what's being described here. All right? The next section, Article 1, Section 9, limits on Congress says that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Well, we know that's happened. Lincoln did it. Unless, it says, when in cases of, rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Isn't that funny? Now, the public safety requires it, and the answer is, the hell with you and the horse you rode in on. There is one more place where the word invasion appears in the Constitution, back when we had one. It has to do with Article 4, the states, and under Section 4, where it says that every state shall be guaranteed a republican form of government, it also says that the central government shall, quote, protect each of them against invasion. Except, of course, when the invasion is one that we are encouraging and we intend to use to overturn this Constitution and rule of law. You'd have to ask, any questions at this point? But wait, there is, of course, still more. If you look up the other forms of the word invasion, like the past tense has already been invaded, you might find this at the end of Article 1, Section 10, Paragraph 3, to be precise, but the Supreme Court doesn't seem to care about this part either, where it says that no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty on tonnage, keep troops or ships of war in time of peace, enter into any agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power. Oh, and parenthetically here, you notice how many of those the People's Republic of California has already violated without a peep from the so-called Supreme Court? Or engage in war? Well, unless actually invaded, or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay, unquote. And isn't that what an emergency is all about? We are being invaded. We cannot admit of delay. And what has the Supreme Court just said? Besides the raised middle finger and issuing wire cutters to the border traitors? The hell you won't. That invasion is going to continue, and how dare you even try to impede it by putting up a little razor wire, much less thinking you still have a vestige of the rule of law or constitutional authority. Folks, this is an open act of war by a court that no longer gives a damn about the Constitution that they've basically been gang-raping for quite a while now, but I guess, again, we could say the gloves are off. There was no hint, of course, of a rationale here for saying, let the invasion continue. Now, maybe this is superfluous, but I will point out that back when we had a Bill of Rights, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments are particularly well ignored. They had something like this to say. First, Article 9 of the Bill of Rights, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, if we fail to do what this Constitution says we're supposed to do, like protect you from invasion, protect your life, liberty, and property, and we literally stand back and cut that razor wire, you have a right to do whatever it is you need to do because of breach of contract. And the Tenth Amendment, just in case that first one wasn't clear, is very similar. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, how about ones that were supposed to be taken care of by the central government, but they're in breach of, like not protecting you from invasion? Well, it says they are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Now, there's one more element of this, folks, that's interesting historically. Certainly, it was true, and it still remains true, and I would say obvious at this point, that if there's an invasion going on of some state, by land or sea, and there's not time to get the Congress to act, clearly the state is, by this document, empowered to take care of itself and expect help from the central government as soon as is humanly possible. That is, obviously, and after all, the reason why Article 1 says that Congress has the power and should, in fact, call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and, yes, repel that invasion already in progress. So I'll say it again. The Supreme Court didn't just fail. It aided and abetted treason. Now, interestingly, and many of you are probably trying to recall this quote, so let's look it up. And arguably, this case is almost a polar opposite in a number of respects. But in the infamous 1832 case of Wooster v. Georgia, where the state of Georgia refused to obey the court, President Andrew Jackson said of the court's decision, referring to the Chief Justice at the time, John Marshall, "He's made his decision. Now let him enforce it." Maybe, folks, we'll see at this point whether the state of Texas has an attorney general, or especially a governor with a backbone. After the abomination of a decision came down, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton weighed in and tweeted the following, quote, "The Supreme Court's temporary order allows Biden, sick, to continue his illegal effort to aid the foreign invasion of America. The destruction of Texas's border barriers will not help enforce the law or keep American citizens safe. This fight," he said, "is not over, and I look forward to defending our state's sovereignty." After previously having installed about 30 miles of razor wire at the Texas-Mexico border near Eagle Pass to attempt to stop the flood of illegal invaders being encouraged to come on in by the Biden-Fuhrer, on Monday evening, Texas Governor Abbott tweeted out that he will continue to defend Texas' constitutional authority to protect its own border. To which the only proper comment, folks, is, we'll see. Because as of now, at least so far as the what passes for courts are concerned, the Constitution has nothing whatsoever to do with it. Oh, and by the way, as several stories in places like the Gateway Pundit are now noting, this latest court failure is the ninth time overall that the so-called court has granted an emergency application from the Biden-Fuhrer regime to, well, let's call it what it is, destroy the nation outright out of 14 different emergency applications. And interestingly, that doesn't even count the time when they allowed the government to be overthrown by ignoring the fraud during the 2020 election and all the violations of state constitutions and the rule of law that got us here to begin with. If there are history books written in the future, folks, they may well cite January 22nd as the day when the Second American Civil War was declared. And meanwhile, I guess you could call this a very much related story. Investigative reporter Michael Yon, who for a long time has been documenting the invasion, and in fact, the invasion camps that are being set up all the way from inside Texas to just across the non-existent border to all the way down on the Darien Gap in Panama, where huge sums are being spent to literally construct invasion infrastructure, where a combination of traitorous Americans and communist Chinese military forces are setting up absolutely huge invasion camps, and Michael Yon has sent up drones and is showing Americans what they're not supposed to see, the true extent of the invasion that is planned and currently being executed against them. Item. Yeah, this is yet another related story on the invasion. This one comes from InfoWars about the topic of China's ownership of U.S. farmlands, which they say is now starting to boil over. Well, it's a bit late, but still, 6 months, it says, after we reported that a bipartisan bill aims to block Chinese purchase of our U.S. farmland, we're starting to see more attention being paid, even in Congress, can you imagine that, as Bloomberg notes that America is, quote, seeing more and more of its fertile land being snapped up by China and other foreign buyers, unquote. Still, the big problem remains, they say. It's difficult to know just how much farmland has already been bought due to the problem with how the U.S. tracks, or maybe doesn't track, such data. I mean, think about it. After all, they have to have some place to put all these new invaders. They need places from which to deploy to their targets. That is, until they destroy the rest of America's native population and take over their lands by force or simply overwhelming numbers. Still, though, says this story, U.S. Department of Agriculture data shows that foreign ownership and investment in U.S. farmland, pastures, and forests jumped to 40 million acres, probably a lot more than that, but at least that, in 2021. That's up at least 40% from 2016, officially, but an analysis conducted by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, a supposedly nonpartisan watchdog that reports to Congress, found mistakes in that data. Who could have thought it? Still, foreign ownership of U.S. cropland, it says, is drawing attention from Washington as concern rises, gee, do you think, about possible threats to trivial things like food supply chains and other national security risks. These things and other recent events lead me to spend a couple of minutes talking about a recent piece by Brandon Smith, both from his website and lewrockwell.com. It's entitled Obama's Weird New Movie and America's Extreme Vulnerability to Cyber Attack. He begins by saying there's been a lot of buzz lately about that recently released film on Netflix called Leave the World Behind, based on a novel of the same name. The plot revolves around a catastrophic collapse in the U.S. triggered by a cyber attack and a mass drone attack that shuts down the internet, disrupts the global economy, and leads to questions of who might have all been behind it. Guess what, folks? They're going to lie about that one. The most interesting aspect, of course, of the film is not so much the story, which he says is lackluster at best, but the fact that the real puppet master behind the fake puppet, Barack Hussein Obama, a.k.a. Barry Sabarco, Barry Sotero, was so deeply involved in the making of the film as both executive producer and advisor on the script, which led many people to suggest the movie is really just predictive programming, propaganda designed to acclimate the masses to the idea of an event that's planned to happen anyway, sometime in the near future. Similar concerns, notes Brandon Smith, were raised back in 2021 when the WEF oversaw a so-called war game called Cyber Polygon. I remember talking about that. An event meant to simulate a massive cyber attack on the vulnerable functions of the World Wide Web. And the reason Cyber Polygon raised so many eyebrows was perfectly understandable. The WEF had also hosted another simulation at the end of 2019. You know this one, don't you? Event 201, that was followed up by the biggest bioweapon release, so far at least, in American and world history. In other words, it's almost like the globalists at WTF knew exactly what was going to happen, and they planned to either capitalize on it or give it a nudge. Continues Smith, while Hollywood interpretations of cyber attacks are usually exaggerated in terms of the true effects, there is a very real and considerable threat associated with such a disaster, so the so-called experts of the tech field often dismiss the wider dangers to the internet itself because they've been indoctrinated into believing that the design of the web has too many redundancies. In other words, it's invincible, which is not really the case. Though data loss can be prevented through cloud storage, the internet as a mechanism can still be shut down or taken down deliberately for long periods of time. And that's especially true as centralized nodes like the data center called a fusion center in Utah and similar places collect and concentrate data so that they can, manipulate it and or control it, and especially, of course, record it. And we all know why, eventually with the idea being able to coerce folks into taking a mark, without which you won't be able to access the web and then thus not be able to buy or sell. In the past, as Brandon Smith, I've written about a very interesting event that was barely covered by the corporate media called Fastly outage. In June of 2021, there was an internet outage that led to large swaths of the web going completely dark, including a number of mainstream news sites, Amazon, eBay, Twitch, Reddit. A host of government websites also went down, and all of this happened when content delivery network CDN and their company Fastly experienced what they called a bug. Or was it a debug, folks? Anyway, Amazon had its website back online within 20 minutes, but still, the brief outage cost the company over $5.5 million in sales. And he notes here, a content delivery network, or CDN, is a geographically distributed network of proxy servers and their data centers, and they make up what's known as the backbone of the internet. Continues Smith, Fastly identified and fixed the problem within 2 hours, and they continue to claim that the outage had nothing to do with a cyber attack. Anybody even remotely surprised by that? However, a huge vulnerability for the internet, a center of structural support that Karl von Clausewitz would have called a Schwerpunkt, was revealed to the public. A sizable portion of the web is dependent on only a handful of CDN companies, including Fastly. In other words, folks, it's a node, a vulnerability that if you were a foreign agent or organization wanting to take over the country, you might be tempted to target. Or if you were a traitor from within, you might be tempted to not only encourage the vulnerability, but maybe put in some back doors for them. It's also through collusion with these companies, says Brandon Smith, that governments are able to implement their internet kill switch in the face of potential civil unrest. Like, say, for example, the people figure out that they're being invaded and it's probably too late to do anything about it, but better late than never. A cyber attack would simply remove the government as arbiter or from the chain of responsibility and allow plausible deniability. In other words, they could use a false flag scapegoat to avoid any blame for what, we've all known was planned and being implemented now for a long time. But what would really happen if we lost the internet, he says, for a week or a month or even a year? In the U.S., the result would be calamity because our economy has become far too dependent on digitization. Around 10% of U.S. GDP is directly tied to online commerce, which may not seem like much, but a loss of that GDP would send the U.S. into immediate and steep recession, or some might even be tempted to use the D word, folks. Around 17 million jobs in the U.S. are generated by commercial internet enterprises. About 38% of these workers are employed by small businesses, and according to surveys, 70% of American workers say they could not do their jobs effectively without internet access. And oh yeah, folks, you certainly wouldn't hear news shows like this one either. And bear in mind, as Brandon Smith hastens to add, if the trend of work from home during the COVID pandemic lockdowns had stuck, an even bigger piece of the economy would still be dependent on the health of the web. Interestingly, says the story, the five industries considered most vulnerable to cyber attack are public administration, healthcare, and pharmaceuticals. And ironically, I have to note here that if all three of those suddenly disappeared, you could certainly make a good case that America as a whole might actually be better off. But anyway, back to his point. The rest of the list includes finance and insurance and education and retail. That is to say, these are the industries most often cyber attacked. While attacks on vital utilities are usually considered the favorite set pieces for the disasters that are portrayed in fiction and in film, these are actually, he says, far less worrisome because the real danger is the potential for an attack on the internet as a system. Noting that all it would take is for a couple of these CDNs or more to be hit simultaneously to cause vast online blackouts. Most important of all, he continues, might be the ways in which international banking and finance utilize online networks to maintain the flow of money internationally. So without the web, trade velocity dies immediately, and building it back from that implosion could take years. But remember the Latin phrase, quo bene? Who would benefit from such an attack? Certainly foreign powers, like, for example, those invading the United States via the non-existent borders already, just might see the additional crippling of America's digital infrastructure as yet another way to severely damage the country without having to fight directly and militarily. See how this all kind of fits together? However, there are also a number of benefits to the globalists. For example, he says, one of the biggest obstacles for the elites during their attempt to institute medical tyranny and their Great Reset during the COVID pandemic was the proliferation of factual data that debunked the pandemic narrative. American conservatives represent a serious barrier to their success, with tens of millions of gun-owning patriots simply refusing to comply. And the harder they push, the greater the chance of an armed insurgency, i.e., and you may have heard this phrase, waking up that sleeping giant. So even though the establishment had every single big tech conglomerate on their side when it came to mass censorship of any contrary information, they still failed to stop the spread of the truth. COVID was nowhere near the threat they hyped it up to be, and the public was quickly made aware of this by the alternative media. The elites didn't have as much control over the web as they might have thought they did. So here comes the punchline. In the event of a large-scale cyber attack, is it inevitable at this point? The internet could be shut down completely, and that is clearly part of the plan. But don't worry, folks. Remember, you already know what comes next. Ever heard the phrase, build back better? And along with it, put in some more control mechanisms so that you can have that inevitable and oh-so-wonderful, if you're a globalist tyrant anyway, mark of the beast. Continues Smith, though. Leaving only corporate media sources to filter information and control the narrative. Meanwhile, the alternative media would be silenced and the public would be left in confusion, desperately searching for answers. And interestingly, this was a core theme of the Obama propaganda flick, Leave the World Behind. The idea of a population utterly cut off from reliable information and forced to rely on the likes of, yeah, the scumbags that are already pushing that kind of crap down people's throats. And as he puts it, scrambling to try to figure out who it is that's really attacking them. The internet, he concludes, has already become an integral pillar of Western economies to the point where a majority of people simply wouldn't know how to live without it should it disappear. Just picture how bad things would get if they had to go for a day or even a week without their cell phones, for just one example. This, he says, is the disturbing reality we face in the midst of a growing series of geopolitical conflicts with ever more oppressive governments. It would seem it's only a matter of time before there is a major disruption. So he concludes, and here I largely concur, the solution is pretty straightforward. Localization of trade and production is the way to prevent full-spectrum collapse, and alternative communication networks, such as ham radio networks, can prevent the planned information silence. There's no reason why Americans should have to become subservient to the whims of globalism, the interdependent supply chain, or digitization. They can and should simply create their own backup plan. And he says getting people to realize this and implement basic local measures is where we run into difficulties, because sadly, a lot of first world citizens assume the system will always be there when they need it, and they don't actively seek out solutions until disaster is at their doorstep, or worse, has already come down upon their heads. As we wrap up today, folks, what I want to suggest is that it's time to recognize just how many of these things are coming together. Obviously, you can't count on a Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution if they don't give a damn about what it actually says, particularly when it comes to some of the most important reasons why it was even put in place. And if or when they censor or even destroy your ability to even communicate about all of that, you know the jig is up. And it's already getting very, very late. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.